You also made a note that I wrote down because I've been giggling about it, and now we might have a new a new bit coming on.
Oh yeah.
Where you said that the doctor has some African gray parrot energy, and I went, yeah, he does have some intelligent parrot energy. We'll pause the bit until I could come up with a better name for it, but I do think that the doctor is some kind of cockatoo.
How many games are we going to play where it's guessing, where it's trying to attribute the doctor to some various animal?
It's just me flexing how much I know about animals. A fact that not a lot of people know, but I was a Zoo Books kid. Fun fact about that is I didn't actually read them. I just looked at the pictures.
I think that's all Zoo Books were for, let's be real.
Yeah, I mean, well, because a lot of times I would watch... like animal documentaries on PBS, and
they were playboys for animal nerds. They weren't. You didn't look at them for the articles. You were there for the pictures.
I mean, have you read some of the articles in Playbook magazines?
Playboy?
Yeah, I have one that it's a vintage Playboy that I accidentally spilled a whole bottle of my perfume on. So now it's the sluttiest magazine I own. It just smells vaguely of jasmine and baby powder.
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I don't know a lot about Doctor Who.
And today we are looking at Series 4, Episode 1, Partners in Crime.
Hooray!
Yes, this is
Donna, the... Donna, 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 Donna,
Donna, Donna, Donna, Donna, Donna, Donna.
Donna, Donna, yes, Donna, 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 Donna.
Yes, this is the first episode with the return of Donna. You met her in The Runaway Bride,
mm-hmm.
where she was kind of a bitch, but over the course of it...
I would not say bitch. She is eccentric. And
she's a very loud personality, might be the better way of putting it.
She, just from that episode alone, does remind me a quite a bit like some of the people I'm related to.
Well, I won't ask you to name names because some of them might listen.
I highly doubt it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Donna Noble. So that's so funny thing. She was not intended to come back, much like
Kylie Minogue. Yes,
much like Kylie Minogue in the last episode, the Christmas special companions are sort of just meant to be their own thing, but Catherine Tate and David Tennant work so well together, and I also believe that Russell T. Davies just thought of a good idea to bring Donna back, that they changed their minds and brought her in anyway. So this episode, you already know that she's coming back here,
mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's any surprise, so let's maybe make the first bit of the Casperfassy about her today.
I was curious to see if they've done anything else together.
They actually did a sketch together, I believe also for charity, for the Catherine Tate show.
I was going to say.
Where Catherine Tate was playing... I might show this at some point. We might do it between episodes. It's a little special.
Where they're eating gooseberry and cinnamon yogurt.
That is a sketch that you've seen, but no, this sketch is she plays it up.
That is a sketch you've seen.
No,
sorry,
that's not how I meant that to come
Jeez.
Out. That is a sketch from the same show. But the sketch that they did together is Catherine Tate plays a high school girl who is incredibly obnoxious, and David Tennant plays a substitute teacher that Catherine Tate's character keeps accusing of being the doctor. It's really kind of funny. I might show it to you after we watch this episode.
This sounds very silly.
It is very silly. So let's, since we're talking about Donna, why don't we make the first Casperfassy about her today? Yeah. What do you think Donna Noble has been getting up to in the meantime since Runaway Bride?
Getting up to?
Yeah.
What?
Like, what do you think her...
Collecting stamps? I don't know.
That's what the Casperfassy is that you don't know. You're supposed to see into it.
Okay, I'm seeing
nothing.
You don't think she's, you think she's just doing like regular day to day stuff?
I don't know what she would be doing.
Like, she just working a 9 to 5?
Frankly,
she...
I forgot what she was doing in the first episode. I just remember she was going to be married, and the person that...
She was working a temp job where she was getting coffee for people, and one of the people she got coffee for ended up being her...
Not her real boyfriend,
yes.
Remind me what happens at the end of that Christmas episode.
So at the end of it, the doctor offers Donna the opportunity to be a companion, and Donna says no. And so she wanders away and goes back to her family.
She's living at her parents' house.
She's living with her mother and father, yes.
Okay. I mean, I said collecting stamps a little bit as a joke, but I do think that she's just trying. It's either one of two things.
Mm-hmm.
She's either trying desperately to, like, live a normal life.
Okay.
And just trying to be normal. Or do very big, eccentric, like, as if she were trying to call attention to herself to bring the doctor back around because she's bored.
Okay. So which of those things do you think it is? You got a 50-50 shot here.
She feels the type to be more or less accident prone. So I could see her trying her hardest to, like, play cool, pretend everything is normal. I'm just a normal, regular human doing my everyday-to-day job. And then miraculous, wild shit keeps happening around her. So I think it's that. I think she's trying to play it cool.
Okay.
But things keep happening around her that are...
So Donna's trying to play it cool, trying to put the doctor behind her.
Yeah, trying to move on from the doctor.
Yeah, trying to move
on.
Okay.
I think that something happens... Well, clearly something has to happen around her to call the doctor back around.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
For the second part of the Profassi, this story features an alien life form called the Adipose. And I will tell you, an adipose is a real thing. It's not an alien life form. It's named after a real thing. So if you happen to know what adipose means, the answer to this prophecy becomes very easy. But if you don't, it might become kind of fun for you to see if you could figure it out.
Fuck.
So the adipose are a life form that grow somewhere inside the human body. Where do you think they might be growing from?
Osmosis Jones enters the chat. I am also thinking about the little, like, army of pests, worms that live in Philip J. Fry's gut.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say that the adipose lives in a body part, which is located in the human body.
Wow, really? Way to narrow it down. I mean, you said gut. Are you going to say they're in the gut?
It is inside a human. I keep thinking about Saramorphosis, and I know that that's not the right word, because I'm also really trying to remember the thing that they learn in Twilight.
What thing they learn in Twilight?
Like anaphase. Like
anaphylactic shock?
No. It's... like, the specific phases of, like, cells as they're dividing.
Oh, okay. The mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell.
But it's not about the mitochondria. We're talking about...
The mitochondria is the powerhouse of the
cell. Shut up, Zach! I'm thinking slowly! Okay, gut kind of feels like the only thing that is...
Okay.
Because I don't feel like you'll give me the point if I say, in the digestive system... Well, because that could be mouth, esophagus, stomach.
That's a lot of inside area.
Miles of intestines.
So we'll say gut is like below the chest but above the butt.
Like, I'm talking if I can be so bold, like stomach and lower.
Okay. Well,
because when you say you're trusting your gut and you tap your little tummy, you're just
you're trusting the adipose.
I'm gonna kill you. Because when you say you're trusting your gut, usually people pat their tummy. So in my head, gut is stomach or lower.
Okay. Yeah, that works for me. All right. So today the Cassie Profassi is that Donna Noble has been trying to keep her head down, but there are adipose growing in people's guts. We will find out together as we watch Partners in Crime. This episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by our biggest fan. It's very hot right now, and I need this. Back to the episode. And we are back from Partners in Crime.
Listen, Russell T. Davies got a fever, and the only prescription is more drums.
Yes, we've neglected to mention it during Voyage of the Damned.
Jeez Louise.
But the remixing they did, or not remixing, the new arrangement they've done for the Doctor Who theme has some really prominent drums in it this season.
It feels like they went, hey, every other instrument, they are on one track. So we have that track. We love that track. We're going to add a whole new one, but we're going to bump the sound on that track of just the drums. We want to make sure everybody knows that there are now drums in the arrangement, baby. Ba-ba-ba-bow.
Hey, guys, the drummer on this new track is my cousin, so we really need to make sure we crank that drums up as high as we can.
He's had a rough year. Somebody stole his car.
Somebody called him fat.
And, hey, his cat won't sit on his lap, so we really got to make sure that he's feeling good.
Someone tied his shoelaces together and pushed him down the stairs.
Somebody pushed him backwards into a puddle of butterscotch. We really got to make sure that
kicked him in the groin and then bonked him on the head.
Somebody booped him too hard on the snoot. Now he's got a bruise.
But let's get to the episode itself, Cassie. How did you think about Partners in Crime?
The fat just walks away.
It does. It does more of a waddle away,
I
think.
Oh, my God. It does a wet, slappy sort of giggly waddle.
His arms look tiny, Dalek.
Now you keep Tiny Dalek out of this. Stop.
Tiny Dalek is
Tiny Dalek, go back to your room.
Tiny Dalek is now made out of human fat.
Shut up, with only one tooth.
Hey, do you just have
and
one little
scary
like,
shark eyes?
Sharp, it's like one sharp buck tooth. And you're right there, kind of like doll's eyes, all black and lifeless like.
Yes! This entire time I was like, man, oh man, why do I not like these fleshy penguins? It's because they have goddamn shark eyes.
You know, it's funny that you dislike them so strongly because they went hard on the adipose. They made little stuffies of them.
I can imagine. They are not hard to manufacture. They, ew, they're the British equivalent of Minions.
You know, you're not wrong. I like how in the stuffed animal, they move the tooth off to the side a little bit.
I like that it's just like, it's just a colon and a parenthesis.
That's its face. Yeah. Its face is an emoticon.
But yeah, I mean, if you really want to dive deep, their design is most likely due to the fact that it is very much like Minions, which our good friend Rachel has educated us on, is the way that they are shaped. Minions, the way that they're shaped is because it's a cheap and easy shape to manufacture, mm-hmm. basically. So you can make pill-shaped bodies in different variants easily and then put them into crowds and boom, you've got thousands of minions. I think these operate by the same logic, except none of them have any kind of variety. Sometimes they skip. Physically, though, they are identical.
They're all identical. They're all equally wet.
They've all got weird flipper hands and feet.
Yeah, they have hands, but their like fingers are just like little nubs.
They're webbed. They
look like flippers.
They're disgusting. I hate them.
So for the Cassie Professor, you got one of 2 points today.
You know, I was really 50-50 as to what Donna's been up to.
Yeah, you were correct. It was definitely one of those two things. You just picked the wrong one. Your Cassie Brafassi snoot was pointing in the right direction, and then you turned around in the right.
My gut feeling, though, was correct about the gut feeling.
That is true. Yes, adipose is specifically...
I know it's human fat, but I think that an argument can be made for me.
Yes.
That it isn't that it's coming from inside your body necessarily.
Yeah,
but it isn't.
I would have taken gut, stomach, stuff like that, because I feel like stomach fat is generally speaking the most common thing you think of for fat.
Yes, but we have copious examples of them crawling out of back fat, bursting through. That is, I know I said I wasn't going to bring it up while we were talking. That is legitimately one of my, like, you know, some people have like trypophobia,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, oh, the fear of small holes. And especially like lotus seeds is a good example, because sometimes people will superimpose those onto like human flesh, and it's freaky and gross. And I hate that. And mm-hmm. sorry, everybody, for the mental imagery. You're welcome. Good night. but this in particular is another, ew, like bot flies. Like that's one of those things where it's like things crawling out of skin is one of my
especially deep, the way it like almost bubbles. Like, yeah, I could see that being.
It's one of my, I would hesitate to call it like.
Wasn't a true phobia.
No,
it was just,
no, it's just something that I will
heaves
not.
Heaves your jeebs, as it were.
Yeah, I won't be able to stop thinking about that for a minute.
So adipose is a real thing. Adipose tissue is fatty tissue.
I am adiposed.
Adiposed to this.
Yeah, I'm adiposed to these.
Are you adiposed to Donna Noble as a companion? How do you feel about her first adventure back? Or she's a companion willingly in this one, as opposed to a bride that just poofed into the TARDIS.
Yeah, she this time was asked the Doctor at arguably the worst fucking time. I'm like, at this point, like, I gotta give it to the Doctor, because I know that there have been plenty of times I've asked you questions when it's a really not good time to ask you a question, mm-hmm. and you're like, what are you saying? Stop talking to me right now. I'm thinking.
I've got my thinking face on. Can't you see that?
Yeah. I was like, of course he's going to misunderstand you later on. You asked him while he was actively, like, saving the world. But also not, because nothing really needed saving.
Are you talking about when...
Only one person died this episode, and it's less that they died and more or less that they became scary flesh penguins.
Yeah, one person died and a door got absolutely shot to smithereens. You did. You had already seen the first moment of Donna and the Doctor meeting up again.
Yes.
It was not a porthole as you thought it was in Voyage of the Damned. It was just a round window.
Fair. I mean, technically, still a porthole, but not on a ship. It's a door with a
porthole. Yeah, it's just a door with a window. Do you appreciate having more context for that scene now that you actually get to see it in context, as opposed to just a clip on Instagram?
Yes. If for no other reason than I like the pan over to everybody else in the room.
Are we interrupting you? Before that, though, it's really fun seeing the Doctor and Donna
both be investigator.
Yeah, and just missing each other by milliseconds constantly.
I did write down a thing. It doesn't have anything to do with the episode as a whole, but the word and term cat flap does sound like a modern day Shakespearean insult. You cat flap of a person.
You have the mind of a cat flap.
Yeah.
Sounds like a word for like the primordial pouch cats have.
Cat flap! For those of you listening at home, that was me whipping my head over to yell cat flap at Bailey, who was minding her own business.
Mother, please do not bother with my cat flap. It is very personal what I keep in my cat flap.
Come here with your cat flap.
Speaking of the cat flap, that
the fact that the scary little men, I need to figure out a different word than scary, but the flesh monsters.
The adipose?
I will not call them by their name. The flesh monsters use the cat door to exit the house.
I mean, they're the right size for it. They set off the burglar alarm every day at 1 a.m. because they hop through the cat flap.
I missed that because I was writing down Shakespearean insult.
Yeah, the man the doctor was talking to specifically says that his alarm goes off at 1:10 a.m. every day. That's when he loses his kilo of weight for the day, which is about 2 pounds. So just 2 pounds of fat pops off his body and runs away, waddles his way out the door.
It does make me feel a little bit better knowing that each one of those disgusting little guys are only about a pound.
They're a little less than 2.5 pounds.
I could kick that. That's okay.
They are a little bit smaller than a soccer ball.
I can drop kick that into the ravine behind her house.
They're a little bit smaller than a soccer ball, for sure. Bigger than a softball, but smaller than a soccer ball. Like a football. Even down to the fact that they're kind of oblong-shaped. You were saying
marshmallow-shaped.
Yeah, they are marshmallow-shaped. One bit I like about the cat flap is that he says that it's just been there since he got the house, or since he got the flat. But he doesn't really have a cat. He's not a cat person. And the doctor goes, no, I've met cat people. You're not like them.
Which begs the question, I really need like a side stories episode of the doctor talking to a cat person.
We've seen
not
them.
A cat person in the way that we've already seen on new, 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 new. I think that's 14. York, not those cat people. I'm talking me. I need an episode where the doctor is talking to somebody like me. Ain't that right, Bailey?
Meanwhile, Donna was talking to another person off the list of adipose clients, and it's just, I've lost 10 pounds in 5 days, and now I'm off to dump my boyfriend because I can do better than him now.
I mean, if it's a confidence thing and you're with somebody who, like, you know, is not good for you, but you have the confidence of somebody who is not feeling themselves and think, well, this is the best I can possibly do. This person likes me as I am. But then you get that extra boost of confidence in the shape of at-ats. That's not right.
Adipose
leaping out of your skin and now you're feeling good about yourself. Like, I get that. It is really funny, though, when you then contextualize it for, like, if you or I lost 10 pounds and we're like, I'm so much better than him now. I'm going to dump him. I lost 10 pounds overnight.
I lost 10 pounds. I weigh almost the same amount that we did when we started dating. I do think the show really means for you to perceive her as being kind of bitchy, because she is the only one that really dies in the episode. And so I think they do that to sort of soften the blow of this person turning into a bunch of little mini marshmallows.
I mean,
I guess these are more maxi marshmallows.
I wouldn't say bitchy as much as it's just like,
What if instead of adipose, we called them chubby bunnies?
We do get kind of a nice sequence of Donna being berated by her mother.
Oh, yeah, where she's just sitting at the table.
We stand a disassociating queen.
It's a really fun effect, too, because they have the mom, like, fading around like a montage, but Donna's shot is entirely stationary.
Which is a very good example of, this is you, this is your brain on drugs. Although in this case, it's like, this is you, this is your brain on depression.
She's, like, astral projecting in that moment, trying to send her soul somewhere else.
And then it ends with her asking where Gramps is and going out and...
And you meet Wilfred Mott as actually written this time, instead of just being Stan, the newspaper man.
Mm.
So originally that was supposed to be Donna's father, who was in... He wasn't a large role, but he had a role in The Runaway Bride. Unfortunately, that actor passed away of cancer.
I was wondering. Was like, it's odd that it would just be Mom and Grandpa now, but...
Yeah, originally they had planned on Donna's dad having the same role that Wilfred Mott does in this episode. However, he was either getting sick or he had already died of cancer at this point.
That's unfortunate.
They bumped Bernard Cribbins up to being Donna's grandfather and changed his name from Stan to Wilfred Mott.
Cribbins, I know I said it last time. That's a made-up name.
All names are made up.
No.
I did misremember last episode. I had mentioned that Bernard Kirby's in the classic series. He wasn't in the classic series. He was in a movie called Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD, a movie where Peter Cushing plays the Doctor. And the Daleks are the enemies in those, in both of those movies, but Bernard Cribbins is in one of them.
I just realized I get to, every series, every season of this show, I get to look forward to one Dalek episode. Hell yeah, brother.
A Daleks is, Dalek off that ice cream cone. Mm-hmm. Wilf spends a lot of his time looking up at the stars and through his little telescope. He's looking at Venus, the only planet named after a woman.
Hell yeah.
And that seems to be Donna's reaction too a little bit. It's like, good for her.
Yeah. I mean, Earth could be a woman. Mother Earth.
Mother Earth.
You know, I started saying mother as a joke, and now I just, that's, I don't think I know how to say mother intentionally.
Donna has this really nice moment where she sort of reveals that she regrets turning the Doctor's offer down of being her, of being his companion.
If you ever see a little blue box flying up there in the sky, you shout for me, Gramps. Oh, you just shout.
And it's really nice that she was just like, I was so overwhelmed by it, and now I feel like an idiot.
Which is also extremely relatable in the, at the time, if you're doing the self-care thing and saying, you know what, I'm going to do this thing to take care of myself in the moment. And she does say later on, like, she did try. She did say that she was going to see the world, and she tried. Yeah, she went to Egypt.
Yeah, she went out to Egypt, and she had planned on doing, like, she had planned on going all barefoot and traveling around the world, but then she finds out that, you know, traveling the world isn't adventure like the Doctor. It's going on guided tours.
Yeah, and not drinking the water and coming home 2 weeks later.
Yeah, it's...
Which is, yes.
You don't change the world like fighting giant spider monsters underneath it that live at the center of the Earth.
No, you're paying somebody to give you a guided history lesson.
Yeah.
That's part of my beef with traveling abroad, but...
And then Donna goes to Adipose Industries and waits there the whole day.
Hides in her little blue TARDIS.
She does have a car that is basically the same color as the TARDIS.
Yeah.
They establish that it's her mom's car, but it's still kind of cute that that's just a parallel there.
So if somebody had a blue musical instrument, a stringed blue instrument, would that be their guitarist? If you travel and you live here, but you go kind of a ways away, can you go far-dis?
If you stand on top of it and make some good jokes, is that a har-hardis?
Whoa.
A hardy-hardis.
That was going in a direction I didn't expect.
I was quite proud of that one.
I can't think of any more. Oh, wait, here's another one. Last one. If the Doctor were to get another dog, would that be his arf artist?
If you put one on top of a Christmas tree, is that a Stardust?
Woo.
So the Donna spends the entire day holed up in a bathroom stall. They establish that she starts at like 9:30 in the morning and then finally walks out at 6 p.m. Can you imagine for a moment spending 9 hours in a bathroom stall?
I would have gone insane, especially since this is 2007?
2008 now. We're
2008. I mean, there's iPods at that point.
Yeah, she must have been. She's been playing a lot of...
What's that one? Not Snake, but it was the one where you like... There was war... Where you, like, shoot down the little, like, stick figures that are jumping out of an airplane. Or there's the one where you bounce the ball off of the bottom of the screen and then it, like, hits the tiles up above.
I know the name of it somewhere in my brain, but I'm blanking on it. Breakout? Yeah. I think it's Breakout. Or she's on...
Just but
on
if you have an iPod Nano...
She's on Facebook playing a lot of Farmville.
Oh, my goodness. Yahoo Games playing Bejeweled.
You know, all the Doctor...
Bookworm?
The Doctor's at the base of the building hiding in a broom closet playing with apps on his sonic screwdriver.
What kind of games do you think he's got on that thing?
I think he mostly just waves it around like a lightsaber. Makes the sound effects do woo 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 woo. Don is waiting in the stall, and then the just like transparently evil woman from that runs Adipose steps out with her two guards carrying machine guns. Why do security guards need machine guns?
In the UK. That's some American bullshit.
Even American security guards just carry around pistols.
That's some U.S.-coded security bullshit.
Oh, I mean, yeah, this episode was very U.S.-coded, right? Under the fact that it was like...
Well, because they say at one point that they did all the research and found the fattest, whatever, like the closest like grouping of obese and overweight individuals, and I went, you clearly didn't look hard enough, because
Texas is right there.
Like, you just gotta, you know, travel a couple thousand miles, but you've seen America, right?
There's an entire lower third of this country that just loves gravy smothered on everything.
I mean, you're not exempt from that.
I'm not exempt. I'm from that lower third. Like, I'm not saying I'm proud of it. I didn't get this body by working out. I got it from eating delicious food and hating my life.
Oh, that's sad. I'm sorry for you. It's the fact, though, that of all episodes to take place in the U.S., this one feels like it should have.
Yeah. This one, it really feels like they had an idea and they forgot, and they just sort of have to ignore the U.S. exists for this one, because a lot of it just would be like, yeah, this would... This only makes sense if the aliens couldn't get there. Like, if they landed on the wrong side of the Atlantic and they went, fuck it.
And they
it.
Ran out of gas. Yeah. Sincerely, it's like, you see how much more walking there is in the UK, right? UK? Like, there are some cities in America where there are no sidewalks. You simply cannot walk. Have you tried walking along a highway? Fucking wouldn't recommend it. There's cryptids out there, and then their parts.
I really like the moment in the bathroom stall where her mom calls and said she needs the karma because she's whispering. And she's like, why are you whispering? I'm in church.
What are you doing in church?
Praying. That feels like some you bullshit. That feels like some stuff you would say if you were trying to keep a secret. And then they're knocking down the bathroom stalls, and eventually they find another person hiding in the stalls.
Penny, the reporter Penny.
Yeah, the reporter from the...
Or journalist, rather.
Yeah, journalist from the very top of the episode. Honestly, when I first watched it, I didn't realize that was her. I thought that was the coworker that was hitting on David Tennant, because her hair's been pulled back into a ponytail since the last time. But in the first part, her hair is down. And then the second part, it's pulled back, so I didn't recognize her because the hair didn't look the same, which is weird to say. I don't know if that makes any sense, or if that's just the casual racist in my white brain.
Yeah, that just feels like casual racism.
Yeah, but it was just like, I don't understand. It's just a weird...
I don't know if they're trying to be like, oh, since Martha's left... Now people that remind the Doctor vaguely of Martha just surround him. There are other races of people. The showrunners know that, right?
Yeah.
I have yet to see any featured,
you know, I
Asian
actually,
character.
I hadn't actually considered that idea of that they were doing that to remind the Doctor of Martha. I never thought.
Well, because they, jumping to the end a little bit, he has a whole spiel about how much Martha did impact him and how much of a fool he was for just completely...
For ruining her life.
Yeah. Which, like, not... I wouldn't say her whole life. She was only gone for, like, 2 weeks tops.
Well, she was gone for 2 weeks, but she also lived a whole year in the apocalypse.
True.
That didn't get erased from her brain, so she's got some trauma to work out that she can't talk to anyone about because no one will believe her.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that is...
She's like, oh, by the way, I lived through 2008, and it was the apocalypse. Humans were dying.
I mean, at that point, you could just jade it as, I have a recurring nightmare.
Yeah.
Where I live out a year in the apocalypse. Even if you're coding it as, this is a dream I've had. But for you, it is just trauma that you're processing. But having to change the vernacular of it to be digestible for people that were and were not there.
Yeah. the Doctor and Donna do finally meet face-to-face through a couple of windows and a room in the middle of them. And so they have a silent conversation. And I love how well David Tennant and Catherine Tate can pantomime this, because even though you can't hear a word of it, you know exactly what they're saying.
You know exactly what they're saying for, like, the first half. It's very clear who is saying or what each person is saying. But at one point, it gets a little ambiguous.
She starts playing a little bit of charades.
And you just kind of have to nod and
I agree. Was reading on the internet that you were headed for your TV, and then you were, and so I was walking here, and I was, your old flower.
Wow, good job. You know how to read mouths, kind of.
It was very silly, and so...
My favorite part of that, though, is the, like, plucky Pink Panther-esque music.
It's very, Murray Gold was having a field day with that moment. You mean to tell me this is a moment where no one's talking, and so my music gets to be all that there is? Perfect. It's going to be the derpiest little, like, plunkiest plunks on those strings we can put together.
I love it.
One of my favorite little details is right when the Doctor first arrives at that window to spy on them, he pulls out a stethoscope to listen through the glass. Like, oh, of course he has a stethoscope. He's a doctor.
That's very silly. I did not put the two and two together.
So the Doctor and Donna finally meet up properly, and they get to the roof of the building. There's a whole lot that happens real quick there.
Yeah.
Where
the only note I have for that is Sonic Screwdriver Duel of Fates. Yeah, because it's the first time I think the Doctor has interacted with an opposing sonic instrument.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it's a pen.
Well, I mean, there's a sonic gun that Jack Harkness had.
Yeah, but that's... Opposing. That is...
That's fair. Yeah, they were... That was an allies thing.
Yes.
There's also
a long-lost lover.
There's also the Master with his laser screwdriver.
Yeah, but that's different because he is a Time Lord.
It's different. He's a wizard. He gets his own wand.
Well, yeah, but this is somebody who is not a Time Lord, is not a time traveler.
Mm-hmm. She's just a wet nurse.
Yeah, she's a nanny.
Which is weird. She's a wet nurse, but the kids are the ones who look wet.
I always thought that wet nurse was somebody who, like, if you have a child but you cannot produce your own milk, then you can go to somebody who is lactating at the moment.
Mm.
And you can, like...
Yeah, that is what they are.
Yeah, and these nasty little gremlins are not needing nutrients in that form. Could you imagine, though, if she just whips out both boobies and all of these...
I mean, she's an alien. There's a very real chance that she takes her shirt off and there's just eight nipples. Like a cat.
Disgusting. There's a very different version of this episode in certain shops, we'll call them,
mm-hmm.
where that exact thing happens. Rule 34, buddy. Oh my god.
I don't know.
Wait, pause. This does not need to end up in the episode. It probably shouldn't. There has to be some Doctor Who porn.
Oh, they're absolutely. Are you kidding me? David Tennant was in this. Of course there's some Doctor Who porn.
Oh my god.
I don't think that Rule 34 means that they just write characters to have eight nipples, though.
Yes and no. Rule 34 is if it exists in media, it exists in porn.
Yeah.
So not this episode necessarily, but if you were a real hyper nerd and you just, oh no, my babies, they need, because that's a kink for somebody.
You know, you're not wrong.
I know.
Although you could say that about literally anything.
Yeah.
So I'm not even talking about, like, the duel of the screwdrivers situation. I'm talking about when they first burst out.
Sonic screwdriver. Yeah, wow, wow, wow.
I'm talking about when Donna and the Doctor first burst
vibrating
onto the roof.
Vibrating sonic screwdriver.
And they just dump.
A honka honka.
They just pour out a bunch of lore real quick. Like, Donna's going around like, yeah, I went to UFO sightings and.
She's going through a whole thing. But the only item she does not believe
is the Titanic that almost hit Buckingham Palace. That has to be a hoax.
The one thing that we actually saw.
So funny. She also mentions that the bees are disappearing.
That's going to come up again later, huh?
Yes, that's going to come up again later.
It's like only good writing foreshadows stuff like that. Oh, but good news, since you brought up the bees disappearing, this is like the first year in over a decade that we are not in a bee shortage. There are so many bees.
Yeah, the bee bees. It's the first year in a while the bee population is growing instead of shrinking.
Yay!
Yeah, hooray! The matron does have her own sonic pen.
I know what
she uses it to, like, speaking of other little drops of lore nuggets, they say that the Adiposians needed to seed Earth because their, what was it they called? Their nursery planet has gone missing. And to which the doctor asks, how do you lose a planet?
Mm-hmm.
There's a good question for you, Cassie. How do you lose a planet?
Well, you just close your eyes real tight and poof, it's gone.
So the doctor takes her down to the little broom closet that they're in, and he's like, oh yeah, she's got a computer running through the entire building, like back here in the back panel of this broom closet. And also in her office, the two most important places for a computer to run.
Weird question. They've run down that same, like, corridor before, right?
That was where the doctor was hiding earlier in the episode.
No, but in another episode, they've used that corridor.
I would assume
before.
That they've almost certainly used. In fact, I would even go so far as to say they may have even used it in The Runaway Bride as, like, part of the underground lair where.
Yeah.
Because it looks like they probably just. It's the same hallway, they just redecorate it. It's got the very similar vibe to when they were running towards the spider lady. Because the doctor has found them out, the nanny sparks premature labor. She starts everyone going into premature labor, which is some really visceral language. I do wonder if it was intentional to have a handful of the people who have adipose popping out of them be men, to like really emphasize like this isn't just women anymore. This is a problem for men too, and that's why you should care about abortion. Like, whoa, weird political turn there. I don't know. I might be reading too far into that, but it does
so.
Feel.
I think it's also because you use word like premature labor. Mm-hmm. The immediate image you get is
pregnancy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's.
It's specifically female pregnancy.
Yeah. So
because nobody remembers that technically male seahorses are the ones that end up giving birth because they carry the sea baby.
You also got
trans
men who can be pregnant.
Well, yeah, but the point there is this is an issue on fatness.
Yeah.
And not so much an issue on women's rights.
Yeah, fair enough. So
men can be fat too.
So as the
you should know.
I do know. I know quite well. As the adipose
Sorry,
start
that was mean, but kind of funny.
As the adipose start popping out of various people's bodies, they start like trotting their way down the street.
Ooh, gross.
There are so many of them. So fun thing about the adipose and how they have all those different adipose about. If you've seen any of the extended versions of The Lord of the Rings, or specifically the special features in the extended version of The Lord of the Rings, they have a special on the Battle of Helm's Deep about how they made a huge army of orcs. Or Uruk-hai, more specifically. But how they made this huge army was they made a program that would specifically use to create massive armies of things that could get them various animations, but you don't need to animate each one individually. So you get a large crowd not doing exactly the same thing that was specifically created by Weta Digital. The same program that was used to create hundreds of orcs was in this episode used to create 10,000 adipose. Orcs and marshmallows. That is what this program is used for.
Use your technology for good, Weta.
Well, that's why they look so wet.
No, because they look like they're in the they're in the phase two of final renderings, but they went TV money. This doesn't need to look awesome.
And then
I will say, and I will commemorate that. Yes, each little guy is doing something different.
There's the one that's skipping that really caught my attention.
There's one that's skipping. There's one that's just kicking his ugly little feet.
I really appreciated that moment where the doctor is like is shutting down the adipose machine so he can like try and save all the people. He does it by pulling his capsule out, but then I double the charge. He's like, well, now I need two capsules. And Donna's just like, you mean like this? Yeah. Although she does it perfectly silently. So she just like pulls it out and like hangs it out in front of him. Like, is this what you want? yeah. like jangling keys in front of him, and they just, I really appreciate the moment of them like getting their two big doofy grins together. I thought that was fun. And so they managed to stop the adipose from killing a million people in London and becoming...
Kill all humans.
So they stop at 10... They say they stop at 10,000 adipose, which is interesting to me, only that the adipose don't... It's not like one person becomes one adipose. It was like one person became like 10 to 15. So I feel like they would have walked away with at least a million adipose just for the process of everybody donating one. The doctor... receives the message from the adipose spaceship that shows up and is just a fucking like classic UFO.
Yeah.
Just a big old circle with a stick in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And so they get to the roof to try and warn the matron that they do not plan on taking the nanny with them. The parents are home now, so the nanny is no longer needed. And so as she's levitating, suddenly the teleportation beam shuts off and she has enough time to like look down and then look back up. And I was just waiting for her to hold up a sign like Wile E. Coyote before she fell down.
Yeah. It was very Looney Tunes, for sure.
I will say, and they really emphasize it on the roof when they're talking about Martha again. This is one of the few times I've ever seen actors that have really strong chemistry, but not at all romantic chemistry.
Yeah, they're like the best of friends.
And they would absolutely, like, vomit before they ever had to kiss the other.
Mm-hmm. They have childhood best friend energy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Or, like, cousins. Like, you know, cousins that grew up together. So they're not quite siblings, but they have that very strong bond. So there's that one point where the doctor's like, yeah, Martha fancied me. And her response is, ah, mad Martha, blind Martha, charity Martha. I'm like, Donna, what a bitchy thing to say.
She's like skipping over the first like 10 steps of being friends with the doctor and is immediately jumping into, we've been friends for a while.
She does it again later when they do a fun repeat of The Runaway Bride where he says, I just want a mate. And she thinks she's meaning he wants to mate. They've already, I think they copied it verbatim, but it's just a funny bit. So I like it. But then she says that he's just a long streak of nothing.
She's not wrong.
A strong breeze could blow him away.
He has the body type of an anchovy from SpongeBob.
He's a, you know, when you're a kid and you just draw stick figures, he's one of those come to life.
Aww.
And Donna's also packed like a million bags for this trip.
Just in case it's hot. Just in case it's cold. Just in case there is no weather.
And also a hat, in case you go to the planet of the hats.
Which, like, I love that. Because you know in her heart, she was like, okay, just, like, pack a bag. Pack a bag. Well, what if it's really, like, what if the weather is extreme? I need to make sure I'm prepared for extreme weather. Well, what if it's extremely hot? Okay, we gotta have a separate bag for all that. What if it's extremely cold? Okay, gotta have a bag for that. Because you know one of those bags is just, like, basics.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else is, like, accessories.
One is just hat.
Yeah, one is simply hat. Hat.
It's like a little propeller hat.
That's not practical. Umbrella hat, Zach.
You're right, I'm sorry. And then Donna realizes that she still has the keys to her mom's car. And so she's like, I'm going to put them in this trash can.
Yeah, as somebody who just fucking had their car stolen, super triggered by somebody saying, I'm just going to leave these keys to my mom's car in the fucking trash.
Around the corner from where the car is parked.
Jeez Louise.
But then she runs over to someone to tell them.
Yeah, she runs over to a blonde woman, and that's the only thing, in a blue jacket.
It's like, just tell her that been there, and then she runs away. And then she turns around and dramatically reveals, Rose Tyler.
My only note was, Rose, what? Spelled W-O-T.
Yeah, what's that? And then she walks away and disappears.
Yeah. What the fuck?
Guess we're going to find out what that's about later, too.
Oh, man. No. Wait, I want to know.
Is Rose a bee? Is she disappearing because she's made of bees?
Hi, my name is Rose with a B, but the B is silent. There's a B?
Where the B is, I'll never tell.
Technically, a B is just an R with more parts.
With an extra leg to stand on.
Gee, all you autistics know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, that is our first adventure with Donna Noble.
Hooray!
Are you excited to get through this season? Because I think it's a really strong start. I think of all the season openers, I think that may be our strongest so far.
I think so. The
Martha's was really strong with the Rhino Cops.
Yes, but this one is like more refined because we're not jumping to outer space.
Yeah.
We're not going anywhere crazy. We don't even leave London.
Mm-hmm.
We're just in a building and in people's houses with cat flaps.
Well, we do something similar next time, because next time they take a trip to the past and they go to Pompeii.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So we will find out what that's about on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? And so we begin our journey with Donna Noble. So, fun little fact, we've actually picked up quite a number of new listeners over the last few episodes. I'm pretty sure it's because that's where the big fan favorite started, but all the same, welcome, new listeners. We hope you're enjoying the podcast. If you are, be sure to subscribe so you get updated when future episodes come out. If you really like us, be sure to leave us a like or 5 stars or even a nice review to help the algorithm lead us to other Whovians out there. You can find us on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, and Instagram at WIMDPod. That's WIMDPOD. Next week, we're just going to chill out, maybe enjoy that Bastille song from a few years ago about... Oh, sorry, hang on. I got my notes mixed up. Next week is The Fires of Pompeii. That does make more sense. We'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.